is Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice. And now your host, the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith.
I am Jeff Smith, and this is Rogue Talk for January 5th, 2018. And we got another great show lined up for you today. And most of you probably have by now gotten in the mail at least one half of the equation here. The voters' pamphlets have gone out, and you should be getting your ballots. I believe they'll come this coming week for a special election, and special election because they want to raise some more taxes. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to go through the voter pamphlet and hit some highlights in there of the reasons for and against this healthcare tax. And I most of you probably won't have to guess where I'm going to stand on this, but we'll go through the pamphlet and see what they're saying and what they're promoting and why that this needed to be a special election for us to vote on a tax. So we'll get into all of that in a little bit. Happy New Year, everybody. It's the first show of the new year, and I'm feeling pretty good here at the end of the first week. It's not the best way I wanted to start the week. I had jury duty starting on the 2nd, Tuesday the 2nd, and that was an interesting thing. I've never actually had to appear for jury duty. I've been called a few times, and I've never had to go in. This particular time, I had deferred from the summertime. I don't have the ability to give up 3 days in the summer and still have a business when I come back. So I deferred it to a little slower time of the year for me. And when I told them after January 1st, they took me seriously and sent me a summons for January 2nd. So they went right to the letter of my request. And so I went in to serve, and I was actually in the first 12 people that they picked for this case. And they started with the proceedings, and it was kind of an interesting exercise. I don't know how many of you have gone in for jury duty and or have been on a jury, but it's sort of they spend a lot of time explaining things to you that seems a little unnecessary. I know there's a reason for it, but even when it comes to the questioning from the attorneys to the jurors, the defense attorney in this case had this large binder, and he had quite a few pre-prepared questions. Now, some of them were more specific to the case that was going to be heard, but some of them were just general kind of questions. And so we went through all the questioning, and this was a counterfeiting case, and I don't know the details of it because I wasn't there long enough to find out. But you know, I answered a few of their questions, some that were asked to the group and one that was asked to me directly. And the judge was asking the attorneys after they were finished with their questioning to do something, and I didn't know what she was doing. Well, apparently the clerk had not given them they have these little pads of paper that I don't know if they have numbers on them or what the pads are. I think they're the way they look, they're probably numbered 1 through 12 or something to that effect. I don't really know, but they kind of scribbled something on one, and they each handed it to the clerk, and the clerk gave it to the judge. And well, I was the first one dismissed. And I'm not surprised by that. For any of you that have listened to this show more than once know, you know, I have an opinion on everything, and I don't always give my opinion. I've learned to keep it to myself a lot more than I used to, but when asked a question, I'm going to give you an honest answer of how I feel. So I guess it wasn't too surprising that I was the first one dismissed by one of the lawyers, but it was kind of a funny situation. She told us that they were going to be excusing some jurors, but she didn't tell us what to do when we were excused. I didn't know if I was supposed to stay there, and you know, I just didn't know what to do. I hadn't been there before. So I kind of sat there with a kind of a puzzled, well, I'm assuming a puzzled look on my face, and we'll get to that in a second. And the judge kind of laughs and says, well, you can go ahead and go, Mr. Smith. And okay. So I stepped down and walked out of the courtroom and headed to the elevator. But as I'm going out the door, there was a lady in the jury pool that wasn't up in the 12 initial jury selection, and she had answered pretty much as every question that they asked. She was very talkative and was really having a good time, and she happened to be the next person up, so she was kind of excited to be there, and she got to take my seat. And to be honest, other than being a little surprised to be the first one called, I was more than happy to be done. Part of me wanted to be on that case mainly because it wasn't a drug case or a theft case. I mean, at least counterfeiting seemed a little more interesting, although it sounded like there was only two witnesses that would be called, plus the arresting officer, so a total of three witnesses. So it would have been fun to be on the case. The only part that bothered me a little bit was that the judge apparently had somewhere else to be in the afternoon, so she instructed us that at our lunch break we would be able to go home, and we would have to come back the next day to finish the trial, and it would be done most likely in the morning on Tuesday. But I really didn't want to lose another day of work. I'm not quite at the time of year where I can just waste vacation days to take the time off. My backlog of work is not too bad, but there's still a little bit that needs to be done. And then, of course, all the winter things that you do in landscaping, pruning trees, and not quite time for roses yet, but those kinds of things need to get started. So, and again, my vacation days went really quick last year because of Snowmageddon. And so I didn't really want to spend more than a day down at the courthouse. And as it turned out, I was excused, and I actually got most of my work done on Tuesday. So anyhow, as I'm leaving the courtroom, this lady that's very anxious to be a part of this, and she's getting her chance, she's going to take my spot. And as I'm walking out, I guess she noticed the puzzled look on my face initially when I didn't know what to do. I just didn't know where if I was supposed to leave or what I was supposed to do. And she, just as I'm exiting out the door, I walk past her, and she was walking toward my seat on the jury. And she turned back and she said, "I really liked you, Mr. Smith. You're very honest." I just had to laugh. I don't know if she ended up on that jury. I don't know how things worked out after I left, but I don't know if she felt like I was embarrassed to be excused, or if I was disappointed to be excused. And I mean, a part of me was disappointed, but really I was happy to not have to come back on Tuesday. But she was a character. I hope they made her the foreman of that jury. That would have been an interesting time for the other 11 folks that ended up on the jury. And when I got to the elevator, it took some time for the elevator to get there, and another gentleman came out that was also excused by the lawyers, and he came up to the elevators, and I said, "Wow, I didn't expect to be the first one out of there," and he kind of laughed and said something about, "Yeah, if you engage too many of their questions, you can usually count on being excused. And I said, well, that's okay, because it seemed like that the lady that took my spot was pretty excited to be there. So hopefully she's going to get to stay on that jury. And we kind of had a good laugh on the way down the elevator. But so that was an interesting time, interesting way to start the new year. And I'm all about doing my civic duty. I would love to serve on a jury for an even more, you know, complicated case. But in this case, I was happy to be excused. And so just to keep the new year going in a very strange and interesting way, I headed over to the high school that evening after work for a couple of basketball games. And between games, I needed to go over to the other side of the gym to get all the names of the players that would be in the next game. And, well, let's just say that gravity is not my friend. I found out that, in fact, I cannot fly, no matter how hard I might try. Took a header off the bleachers, and these were one section that was folded up, and so they're about four bleachers high, and I've jumped down from there dozens of times, and this time I must have taken my eye off the ball, so to speak, caught my toe on the edge of the bleacher, and down I went. And the next thing I know is I'm kind of pushing myself up and kind of grabbing my ribs that were hurting a little at the time. And as it turns out, my ribs are fine. It's my shoulder that's really jacked up. But I'm pushing myself up, and here's three guys in black and white stripes kind of leering over me, asking me if I'm okay and helping me pick up my clipboard and my pen and my glasses that went sliding across the court. And I was a little embarrassed, but I mean, I'm on the radio a lot now. I say a lot of unpopular things at times, so I don't really mind being embarrassed in a crowd of, you know, I don't know, maybe there's 100, 150 people there. That part doesn't bother me. I made my way across the court, and I got most of the way to the scorer's table, and of course all the chieftain parents, people that know me, and most of them actually didn't witness it happening. They heard the thud and looked down to see me in a heap on the floor. But they gave me the old Bronx cheer, and I took a bow and continued to get the information that I needed for my broadcast, because, you know, my sports broadcasts are, it's kind of like the Postal Service, you know, no rain or snow or sleet will keep me from calling the wrong player's name when a three-pointer goes up, you know, something like that. So the shoulder's still a little sore. The pride is probably a little more sore. Of course, the three referees standing over me, making sure I'm okay and helping me up, you know, they're probably 20 years younger than me, so I felt like the old guy that, you know, tripped, you know, caught his walker on the corner of the bleachers, and you know, it was a little discouraging. And then my poor son, who was warming up for the game, had to come over and ask me if I'm okay. I'm sure his teammates gave him some ribbing about that. So all in all, it was an interesting way to start the new year. But I'm happy to be here mostly in one piece. And we got one game to do tonight, so I have to return to the scene of the tragic accident. We'll talk about that game at the end of the show. But again, I'm happy to be here, and I'd like to say I'm happy to be talking about this special election, but, you know, let's be honest, I'm not too happy that we have to do this, but I think it's important stuff, and I think we need to try and make, you know, educated decisions on these kinds of things. So before we head to the break, let's take a little bit of look at some of the news going on around town. The Rogue River Police Department on Tuesday, they wanted to get their new year started on a real positive note. So they handled what was likely their biggest case of the year. Now, the year was only 2 days old, but I'm pretty sure this is their biggest case of the year so far. The what they were working on was a case of roaming cattle. Yes, you heard that right. One cow was spotted on Foothill Drive, while the other was utterly confused when asked for his kickback card at the Chevron on Pine Street. Yeah, I went there. I couldn't help it. The owner showed up with a trailer, and he assured the Rogue River Police Department that they would steer clear of downtown in the future. Sorry, couldn't help myself. I didn't have a rim shot queued up I could play, but yeah, the police department had as weird of a day as I did on Tuesday, and fortunately, the cattle were not hurt. The owner was able to get them back and pen them up, and everybody's happy now. So that so apparently January 2nd is kind of the same as, I don't know, a Friday the 13th, or maybe it was a full moon. I know we just had a harvest moon, but I think that was on New Year's Day. But maybe the mojo of the harvest moon transferred to the 2nd. I don't know, but crazy day for everybody. And so let's get to those games that we had that night. Well, actually, let's get to some games that happened previous last Friday. We unfortunately did not have these games on the air because the times were different on two different schedules, and we, of course, went by the wrong schedule. Well, we didn't know it was wrong, but it turned out to be wrong. So, unfortunately, we weren't able to cover those games last Friday. They were matinees and right in the middle of the day. And it was really unfortunate because the boys' team got their first win of the season. The boys hit 13 three-pointers against New Hope and won the game, final score 76-63. So salute to the boys for that great showing. And that same night, the girls also won. They beat New Hope 35-27, continuing their winning ways. But then on this fated Tuesday night, the tide turned on the Chieftain teams. They couldn't carry their momentum from last Friday into this Tuesday's games. The girls took almost three quarters to get their first field goal. And for those of you that don't follow basketball, a field goal is just a shot from the field. The other way to score, of course, is a free throw. And the Chieftain points were only by way of the free throw for almost an entire three quarters. They finally got their first field goal toward the end of the third. And unfortunately, they lost to Glide 56-15. A pretty forgettable night for the Chieftain ladies, and an uncharacteristic night. They've been really the better of the two teams, at least in terms of wins and losses so far this season. So that was a pretty uncharacteristic game for them, and they will be looking to bounce back in a game tonight against a North Valley JV team. Of course, North Valley plays up at a higher level than the 3A and 2A competition that the Chieftains play against. So they're going to send their JVs to play our varsity girls tonight, and hopefully the girls will bounce back after Tuesday's disappointing loss. And on the boys' side, the Chieftains also were losers, unfortunately. They were actually down 19-4 to start the game through most of the first quarter. But they battled back and battled back, and they got it within two with not a lot of time left. I want to say there was under 10 seconds left in the game. They had the ball. They were down two. They put up a three-pointer to try and win the game, missed the three-pointer. They were forced to foul and ended up giving up two free throws at the end of the game, and they lost the game 57-53 to Glide. But a great showing by the boys. Definitely making big strides from the early season to these last several games, where they've only gotten the one win, but they've been competitive game after game, and you know, hopefully they're starting to turn that corner as we head into the league season. Yeah, the Chieftain boys won't be playing tonight. The JV team is playing in a game, I believe, that starts in about 5 minutes, and they will be playing against, I believe, North Valley's JV 2 team. So that's going to be what's going on there. We'll talk about that a little more at the end of the show. And then over to the wrestling team. Rogue River was the only 3A school at the Southern Oregon Championship, and they fared pretty well against their 6-5 and 4A competition. Gabe Ishidi improved his record to 10-1 on the year with his third tournament championship of the year at 285. Gabe Tambellini finished in fourth place at 220 pounds, and at the 170-pound bracket, Caleb Barnwell was also fourth. So good job to the Chieftain boys. They've got a tournament this weekend. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. And that's all the news and sports I'll have for you for this segment. We will take a quick break, and we'll be back and talk about the election, or the special election, on the healthcare tax. And if you would like to call the show and talk about that tax, if you've got some opinions on it, that number is 541-299-0498, and we will be right back.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. Years of steady hiring and economic growth have delivered a cumulative benefit for at least one group that hasn't always shared in America's prosperity. The unemployment rate for African Americans dropped to 6.8% in December. That's the lowest level since the government began tracking such data in 1972. The FBI is investigating allegations of corruptions connected to the Clinton Foundation while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. That's according to two people familiar with the investigation who were not authorized to discuss the investigation. The people tell the Associated Press the investigation is looking at whether the foundation accepted donations in exchange for political favors. The Hill newspaper first reported that probe. Another good day on Wall Street as the Dow was up by 221 points to another record, 25,296. The NASDAQ rose 59. More details at srnnews.com.
Where the rooster crows. 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN Sports, I'm Michael Harrington. Let's start with the NBA. Just two games yesterday, but a good one between Houston and Golden State. A couple of teams that could clash in the playoffs. The defending champions defeated the Rockets in a shootout, 124-114. Warriors guard Klay Thompson says it was entertaining.
They're an explosive team, and you can't really relax when you get a lead. And same with us. So it was a fun night, and I'm sure the viewership had a good time watching.
In the only other game of the night in the NBA, Oklahoma City beat the Clippers 127-117. AP Top 25 college basketball yesterday. Number 1 Michigan State ran down Maryland 91-61. But number 4 Arizona State was upset by unranked Colorado in overtime 90-81. Number 9 Wichita State over Houston 81-63. Number 14 Arizona beat Utah. Number 19 Cincinnati. Number 20 Gonzaga also winners. This is SRN Sports. A busy overnight in the National Hockey League. Carolina beat the Penguins 4-0. It was the Maple Leafs 3 and San Jose 2 in the shootout. Flyers 6, Islanders 4. The Canadiens beat the Lightning 2-1 in the shootout. Minnesota 6, Sabres 2. The Blues over the Vegas Knights 2-1. Dallas 4, Devils 3. The Flames beat the Kings 4-3. It was the Oilers 2, the Ducks 1 in the shootout. Colorado 2, Columbus 0. Arizona beat the Predators 3-2 in overtime. NFL news, the Titans will be without running back DeMarco Murray for their AFC wildcard game Saturday against the Chiefs in Kansas City. Murray hurt his right knee late in a loss Christmas Eve to the LA Rams and has not practiced since. Tennis, the upcoming Australian Open women's draw will not include the defending champion. Serena Williams has withdrawn from the tournament, saying she's not ready to return. She gave birth to her first child back in September. This is SRN Sports.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. And I want to give out that number once again. If you got anything you want to talk about, including what we will be talking about here for the next few minutes, which is the healthcare tax that is in this special election that's coming up on January 23rd. But before we get to that, I had one listener request a story that I kind of forgot. I got a good laugh about this entire week. I follow a few news agencies in Sonoma County area, and as some of you know, I talked about the fires in that area in the past, and so I had started following some of the news agencies there because I used to live there, and it's kind of fun to follow what's going on. But one of the stories that was popping up on a lot of these was the fact that in some places here in Oregon, we can pump our own gas now, and they've been making fun of us. I mean, let's be honest, they're making fun of the fact that some people that have lived here for a long, long time have probably never pumped their own gas and, you know, might need a little bit of explanation on how that works and, you know, how you turn the pump on and where to put the nozzle. And hopefully they know at least that much, but, you know, you never know. And so we've been kind of at least the state of Oregon has been kind of the butt of the joke this past week because of our new gas pumping law. Now, of course, New Jersey still does not allow anyone to pump their own gas. And for the most part, we still don't here in Oregon. There's some rural counties that are allowed to have self-service gasoline, I think between the hours of 6 p.m. and 6 a.m., something like that. I don't have the law in front of me, but I know that it's a pretty limited thing, and it's only in certain places at certain times. But I mean, let's be honest, they can make a lot of jokes, and there's probably a few people that may need some instruction on how to do it, but at least here in Southern Oregon, half the people here are from California, so they know how to pump their own gas, and me included. I've been here over 16 years, but I was still driving when I moved here. In fact, I drove here when I moved here, and yes, I know how to pump my own gas, and actually, I've pumped my own gas a few times here in Oregon. If you work for a business that uses card lock services, you generally pump your own gas. So, you know, we're not all complete backwater tree hugging morons, but, you know, a few of us are. So let's get back to the topic that I didn't want to talk about, but I think we need to talk about. And the way this started, and you wonder, why is a tax measure being put to the voters as a special election? Couldn't you save that for a regular election? Is it really necessary to do this? Well, the reason that we're having the special election is because more than 70,000 Oregonians signed a petition that would allow citizens to vote on Measure 101. But what Measure 101 is, to preface this before we kind of dive into the voter pamphlet and look at some of the claims that are being made, the reason that this petition was signed in order to get to vote on this is the legislature here in Oregon had passed this tax, and they passed it to be included as part of their two-year budget. So they're counting on the funds from this tax in order to fund their budget. And it has a lot to do with Medicaid spending. And the way Medicaid spending works in a lot of cases, or in most cases, the more your state spends on Medicaid, the more matching funds there are from the federal government. And we'll get into that a little bit more, but so not only are they counting on the small amount of tax money that they're going to collect, and I say small amount, it's in the millions, but when it's compared to a $5 billion budget, this 20-some-odd million dollars is not a huge revenue creator. But what it does do is it shores up their Medicaid spending in order to get more matching funds from the federal government. And before we kind of dive into all of these, I'll just say one thing about, we talked about matching funds a little bit when we were talking about the bond measure here locally. I actually need to do some follow-up on that, because we were like second or third in line for some matching funds, and I don't think we got those matching funds, but I'm not sure. I would have to find that out. But the reason I don't like this carrot and stick matching funds kind of thing is those are still our tax dollars. Whether they're state dollars or federal dollars, that's still our tax money. Tax money is our money. Before they take it from us, it's ours. You know, this recent tax cut that the Trump administration has signed, the media, they characterize these as money that has to be made up somewhere. Well, first of all, tax cuts don't generally cost the government money. They generally, over time, the government brings in more money after these kinds of tax cuts. But that aside, talking about paying for tax cuts is a ridiculous argument, because that's our money. The government doesn't have an income source except for us. So you don't have to pay for anything. You're just allowing us to keep more of our own money. So if we're going to get anywhere on a tax discussion, you know, you have to at least start with the fact that this is our money. They have no claim to it, you know, other than that they want it. And I mean, this country went a long time without a federal income tax. It doesn't mean the federal government didn't have funding sources, but it was not through an income tax for many, many years. And so, you know, this is not, it's just not their money. So I don't like these carrot and stick things where, oh, the matching funds, unless the matching funds are coming from some sort of private source, you know, some sort of private grant or something like that, that's fine. It's none of my business to tell private entities how to spend their money. But when the matching funds are government funds, you're just saying, give us some of your tax dollars so we can get more of your tax dollars. Well, I don't know. That doesn't seem like a very good plan. So I was thumbing through the pamphlet and reading some of the things in here, and I highlighted a few things, and let's just kind of quickly go over some of this. So under the estimate of financial impact, and this is where I was tipped off to what their little plan here is. Now granted, the state did not put this on the ballot. Some citizens wanted it on the ballot. They didn't want this tax, and they wanted us to vote on it, and it, you know, it, at least initially, that makes sense to me, that we want to improve healthcare in the state. We want to lower costs. We want to make it more available. And by doing this, we're going to tax certain healthcare services. The last time I checked my Economics 101 textbook, taxing the industry that you would like to lower costs on usually doesn't work out too well. So I can understand why they wanted to get this on the ballot and let us vote on this. But I read this under the financial impact statement. If the measure is defeated, there will be a reduction of $210 to $320 million in state revenue, resulting in a possible reduction of $630 to $960 million in federal Medicaid matching funds. So there's the matching funds. So if we don't have this tax, we will have a $960 million hole in the budget. Well, I don't know. Whose fault is that? The taxpayers? I don't think so. The estimated hole in their budget actually is even higher than those funds, and I'm not sure where they come up with this number, but they say it would maybe $840 million to $1.3 billion more. Yeah, that must be the new math. What do they call that now? The Common Core math, I think they're using to come up with those numbers. But what the game they're playing here is, oh, we've already done the budget. If we don't get this money, poor citizens are not going to have health care. Old ladies will be dying in the streets. Children will starve, and they'll be kicked out of schools because they can't get their vaccinations, or I don't know. We hear this time and time again. And on a side note, didn't we hear during the whole Obamacare push, before they passed Obamacare, we were told that there shouldn't be a profit on healthcare. Healthcare is a right. Well, shouldn't that extend to the government too? Shouldn't they not make a profit on healthcare? And isn't taxing healthcare services the government profiting on healthcare? Yeah, I think it is. So, you know, again, we get the inconsistencies of the crazy liberal government here in Oregon. So let's move on in the pamphlet. One of the texts of the measure, and the other thing I like with this pamphlet is they don't give you all of the text of the measure. They give you the sections that they think are pertinent. I would like to read the rest of the text, because there's a lot of things in here that aren't being mentioned, like who is excluded from this tax, who is exempt from this tax, and we're going to learn that as we go on here. But none of that is explained in the text of the measure. So, not sure what they're doing there, but we'll move on here. And so one of the sections, and I'll pick it up in the middle here. The Public Employees Benefit Board shall pay an assessment at the rate of 1.5% on the gross amount of premium equivalents received during the calendar quarter. So the Public Employees Benefit Board is going to be taxed on the premiums they pay for health insurance. Wait a minute. Who pays the salaries and the benefits of public employees? Oh, yeah, the taxpayers. So now we're taxing our own taxes. Wow, that seems like a really good plan. They're winning me over here. So I'm going to keep. Let's keep going. Notwithstanding any provision of contract or statute, and I've jumped ahead to Section 8. That was from Section 3. Insurers may increase their premium rate on policies or certificates that are subject to the assessment. They call it an assessment. They don't like the word tax. That's not a good word with the politicians. So if an insurer increases its rates under this subsection, the insurer may include in its billings for health benefit plans a notice, as prescribed by the Department of Consumer and Business Services, explaining that the increase is due to the assessment under Section 5, blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, part of what this says and part of what this doesn't say, they can only raise their rates 1.5%. Based on this tax increase or this new assessment. So, but that doesn't mean they can't raise their rates for other reasons. They've been raising their rates for many other reasons, including the you know, restrictions put on them by the Obamacare law. So we're going to raise their taxes, and they can pass it along to the consumer, but only at a rate of 1.5%. Well, okay, but they can still raise rates for other reasons. And believe me, if they want to raise rates, they'll find legitimate reasons to do it, or legitimate in air quotes. So you know, wow, that one makes me feel really good. So let's move to some of the arguments in favor, and let's see what kind of game they're playing here. Because if you've ever read these voter pamphlets, and this goes for the arguments on both sides, believe me, you've picked up on what side of this I'm taking. But believe me, these arguments are, they tend to lean toward to the emotional arguments and not as much on the factual things. So one of the claims being made here, nearly 25% of Oregonians have a disability, and veterans make up 17% of our disabled population. Many utilize Oregon Health Plan, so that would be Medicaid. If Measure 101 does not pass and 350,000 Oregon Health Plan patients lose access to insurance or prescription coverage, thousands of people with disabilities could be affected and put at greater risk of losing the care they need to maintain their jobs and self-sufficiency. So again, playing on our emotions, it's going to hurt the disabled, it's going to hurt veterans, trying to hit all the groups. As we move on, they're going to hit kids and they're going to hit old people, and I get it. They're playing, you know, they're going to play the emotional card. The problem with all of these arguments is if this measure doesn't pass and they cannot levy this tax, then they need to go back and do their jobs and adjust the budget so that they have enough money to pay for the Oregon Health Plan. If the Oregon Health Plan is that important, they better go find the money to pay for it. Maybe if they would quit kicking the can down the road on our exploding PERS program, the employee retirement program that has overpromised by billions of dollars, maybe they could quit kicking the can down the road on that program and make some actual decisions and real cuts, and then they could afford to fund their Medicaid program at the level that will get them all of their matching funds that they so need. And don't get the wrong idea. The fact that I'm against this, and you can hear in my voice that this is, it disgusts me the way that they do these things. When I moved here, my kids were on Oregon Health Plan. I'm not against the Oregon Health Plan. I'm against having our arms twisted behind our backs every time the state government cannot do its job properly and they want to twist our arms and squeeze more money out of us. And the last time they did this, we defeated their measure. That was, I think, Measure 95, when they tried to do their little sales tax through the back door, and we rejected that one. So I'm hoping we'll reject this one. But let's skip over. I've got one of the arguments that I put a big X through, and the main reason was the people that wrote this particular argument in favor were people like Planned Parenthood and NARAL, the Oregon chapter of NOW. And it's not that I don't really care what women think. Their opinion is very important in these decisions. But Planned Parenthood and NARAL have no connection to this whatsoever, except that they want more federal funding that they receive through Medicaid. So, yeah, not necessarily NARAL, but again, they're sort of connected in that way, but definitely Planned Parenthood. So I honestly don't really care what their opinion of this is, because they're just looking out for their best interest, and I don't happen to share what their best interest is. So their opinion for me, not really, you know, not really what I need to make this decision. But then we move on to some of the hospitals. They listed this big, long list of hospitals, and it includes names like Asante, Kaiser, Legacy, Peace Health, Providence. And the problem with this is one, again, in the same reason Planned Parenthood would support this, more Medicaid spending obviously is going to put more money in the pockets of the hospitals. And that's fine. If people are getting health care, that's where the money should go, from the health care you know, from the people seeking health care to the people providing it. That's fine. I expect the hospitals to be in favor of more Medicaid funding. The problem with these particular ones is most of those names I listed, and maybe some of the ones that I didn't list, are exempt from this tax. So, and again, I don't have, I wasn't able to print off the sections that weren't put into the voter pamphlet, but these are big corporations that are exempt from the tax. Now, I'm not in favor of high corporate taxes. I am in favor of the tax cut that's currently going through the federal government that cuts the business tax rate from 35, I think, to down to 21, I believe it is. I'm in favor of that. This is not about this is not sour grapes that these corporations aren't paying the tax, but it's really easy to support something that you aren't affected by. So in a similar way that I don't really care what Planned Parenthood thinks about this tax, I honestly don't care what these big hospitals think either, because it doesn't affect, the tax doesn't affect them, and even if it did, let's be honest, the level of Medicaid funding that they want to boost it up to, they're going to benefit even if they have to pay that tax. So either way, I expect the hospitals to be in favor of this, so that doesn't really help me much. So here's a couple more notes I highlighted in the arguments in favor. In rural Oregon, 94.5% of residents currently have health coverage. The uninsured rate dropped by nearly 12% from 2013 to 2015. Turning our back on this progress would be devastating. Okay, well, let's take a look at that. What was happening between 2013 and 2015? The Obamacare mandate that is now being taken out by the new tax law, but it was in place in 2013 to 2015. And every year, that tax or penalty increases. And the higher it gets, the more people will choose to buy the cheapest insurance they can buy and quit paying the penalty. Now, I don't think we're actually there yet, and we won't be now that it's been pulled out by the roots. But the reason mainly that it went up 12% in that time period is because people were forced to buy insurance that they didn't necessarily want to buy. That's what the mandate did. And by getting rid of it, some of those people are not going to have their insurance taken away, as the media always portrays. They're going to choose not to have insurance. Generally, this is young people. The good thing about getting rid of some of the Obamacare rules is young people will be able to, at least the ones that are in college, will be able to get low-cost plans provided through their college or university, that much of that had gone away due to the restrictions of the Obamacare law. But a lot of these young people that are healthy and have other things they would like to spend their limited amount of money on will not buy health care. Now, you may think that's a bad choice, but that's not your choice to make. And that was one of the ridiculous parts of the Obamacare mandate. And I am going to run out of time in this break. We will have to cut this conversation somewhat short, but I will come back with the schedule of events, and we will be right back.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. Two Republican senators have made the first known criminal referral in congressional investigations of Republican meddling in the 2016 presidential election. They're targeting the author of a dossier of allegations about President Trump's ties to Russia. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley of Iowa and South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham say they've referred former British spy Christopher Steele to the Justice Department for investigation about false statements he may have made about the distribution of claims contained in the dossier. Lawmakers cannot prosecute criminal activity, but they generally refer any criminal violations they find to the Justice Department. The senators say part of the referral is classified. The dossier was compiled during the campaign and contains allegations about Trump's ties to Russia. It was partially paid for by Democrats. On Wall Street, the Dow up by a record 2,221 points to 25,000. This is SRN News.
Broadcasting on 100,000 milliwatts.
Don't try this at home.
94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice.
And welcome back to Rogue Talk. So we're not going to get to as many of the points that I wanted to hit in this, but as you can hear from the way I'm describing this, I am not in favor of this tax. It doesn't make sense. It's another one of the Oregon legislature's cop-outs. They just don't want to do their job and balance the budget, so they continue to look for more ways to squeeze money out of the economy. And the only one thing I will touch on as I move through the extra 5 or 6 pages of arguments in favor compared to the arguments against, a couple of things that I noticed, I don't know if this was done on purpose or if this was a clerical error, but one of the arguments against was listed as an argument in favor. I found that kind of interesting. As I was reading through them, I'm going, wow, this doesn't sound like somebody supporting it. And I had to double check what page I was on. And sure enough, it said at the top, argument in favor, but it was not an argument in favor. Another thing I noticed, a headline that, you know, working for the Bridge, it sort of hit me a little bit as I read this. Oregon's faith leaders support Measure 101. Well, there is a couple of organizations that support this measure. One of them is the Oregon Center for Christian Voices. I don't know anything about them. I'm sure they're a, you know, they may be a big organization, but I don't think they speak for all faith leaders. I'm pretty sure that they don't. So that was an interesting, you know, the top of this little, you know, couple of paragraphs was with that title, Oregon's faith leaders support the measure. Well, I got a suspicion that not all of them support it. Maybe a lot of them do. I haven't polled them myself, but I doubt seriously that they can speak for all of them. One of the most notable oppositions to this measure, and I'm going to run out of time, I just want to get this one in. This will cost $25 million in healthcare taxes to schools. So again, where does the money we spend on schools come from? Tax money. So again, we're taxing our tax money. And on top of that, why would we want to take money away from our kids? Aren't we always talking about how they need more? We just had a bond measure locally because they needed more. And now we want to take it away to the tune of $25 million. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So I'm against this one. You can hit me up on the Facebook page, Rogue Talk Facebook page, if you've got an opinion you'd like to share on that. And let's quickly hit the upcoming schedule. The Chieftain Wrestlers will be at a tournament this weekend. We'll get you those results next week. The basketball teams will be in Gold Beach tomorrow. Varsity games will be at 3:30 and 5 o'clock right here on the Bridge. And then next week on Tuesday, the Chieftain teams will host Illinois Valley. Times to be determined. They're either at 6 and 7:30 or they're at 5:30 and 7. Haven't been able to get that cleared up yet, but that is going to be all the time that we have. I hope you have a glorious weekend, and just want to let you know, be good to one another, because Rogue Talk is over.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith, Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice.
94.3 The Bridge.
Or on demand at 943thebridge.com.